Paid for by IMIC Incorporated.
The Cure with Amy Cabo is brought to you by IMIC Research. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure, always joined by Boris Nikolov, my partner at work and in life.
Hi, how are you?
We created this show as a safe space and to show that there is hope after going through difficulties, no matter what type. I'm trying to use testimonies to that effect and inviting professionals and speakers that can help with suggestions. As a survivor, I hope to inspire others, encourage transparency, and finding strength in knowing that those who suffer are not alone and that those who heal against insurmountable odds do exist. Last week, we were talking about alternative approaches for help with mental illness. And today, we want to continue talking about living with mental illness and the existing stigma. Today's guest is Gabe Howard. Gabe Howard is an award-winning writer and speaker who lives with bipolar and anxiety disorders. He's the host of the weekly Psych Central show and iTunes Top 10 podcast. He's also a co-host of A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and a podcast which explores life through the unique double lens of a young woman living with schizophrenia and a guy living with bipolar. He also writes for WebMD, Psych, Central, Bipolar Magazine, and other distinguished publications. Gabe, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
Gabe, It's wonderful to have you here as well. And for our listeners that may not be aware of what bipolar is or anxiety or depression, could you tell us a little bit about what it is that you deal with on a daily basis, what you struggle with and what you've had to overcome? Tell us a little bit about what is bipolar, what kind, whether it's bipolar 1 or 2, any symptoms that you're challenged with and your symptoms basically.
So I live with bipolar 1, and the difference, so we'll back up a little bit. It's a big question. Thank you. I love big questions right off the bat. It gets me nice and loose and warmed up. I really appreciate it. And it's such an important question and one that so many people are afraid to ask. And, you know, I just want to say right away, I think that everybody is familiar with mental illness and bipolar and anxiety. They just have all the wrong information because they think it's rude to ask or they don't want to discuss it. Or so they just all kind of whisper among themselves. And, you know, when we're not really engaging and talking and learning, we get the answer wrong. We get it wrong almost all the time. So thank you for being so direct. I want to start right there.
Of course. I mean, we get the information from what we see on TV, which I'm sure they show the extreme cases, and people are not aware that there's a bipolar 1 and there's a bipolar 2. In fact, I didn't even know that there was a bipolar 2 until I was diagnosed with it. And
yeah, it's
yes.
No, you're absolutely right. And of course, the extreme cases, of course, they're more newsworthy and they're more excited for television. I have this saying that I tell people all the time, and I say that crisis with bipolar disorder is very public, and wellness with bipolar disorder is very private. Because when I'm just walking down the street, you know, going to work, paying my bills, running my errands, I look like a boring 40-year-old guy. Nobody says, there's that bipolar guy going to the grocery store. They just say, there's that regular-looking guy going to the grocery store. But if I became symptomatic in the grocery, then, yeah, everybody talk about it. They'd be like, oh, my God, there was this bipolar guy, and he just started yelling at the creamed corn. We don't know why. but to back it up and get your answer so people know, you know, exactly what we're dealing with. So bipolar disorder is defined as extreme lows to extreme highs and everything in between on that spectrum. So extreme lows would be, you know, your suicidal depression. And extreme highs would be your godlike mania. And I say godlike because it really is this consequence-free, all-knowing, incredible feeling that, of course, is based on nothing. I mean, it's you have all of this confidence and none of it is deserved. You have all of this knowledge and none of it is correct. And you have this idea that you are invincible and that consequences don't matter, which, of course, is nonsense. Consequences matter to all of us, no matter who we are.
Of course.
And that's what mania feels like. And then, of course, I always like to point out that it is back and forth. So sometimes you'll be right in the middle. You'll be quote unquote normal, typical, and everything is fine. And in some ways, that's the worst part of the illness, because when you're in the middle, when you're normal, when you're typical, that's when you get the job. That's when you meet the love of your life. That's when you make the friends. That's when you build the relationships. You know, all the things that you lose when you become symptomatic.
Yeah.
And that's really what the illness is. It's just this back and forth on this god-awful teeter-totter.
And is this back and forth on a daily basis, or, I mean, does it come and go, or is it something that, is it symptomatic, like, for a long time? For example, depression, it has to be persistent over a period of time. And the reason I'm asking you this, because I'm not familiar, for me, the bipolar 2 is just mainly depression. Depression all the time. There's no highs, maybe a little bit you feel okay, but it's basically characterized by depression that's more severe than major depression, with maybe one or two nights of sleeping, one or two hours, or a few hours. Then you got bipolar 2. So that's my story, but I'm not very familiar with bipolar 1. I know that for me, it can last a few hours during the day, or a few days, or a few months. How is it for you?
Yeah, so the big difference between bipolar 1 and bipolar 2 and why they sort of cut it up is, so bipolar 1 and bipolar 2, for lack of a better analogy, we'll say they both start at zero on the scale, and zero being like the worst depression that you can imagine. So bipolar 1 and bipolar 2 are both on that scale starting at zero. Now, the person who has bipolar 1, somebody like me, will go all the way up to 100. And 100 is the most, you know, delusional mania that you can figure. Like, you think you can fly. That is how manic you are. That is, the mania is just all-encompassing, all-gripping. And again, you really do think that you have become some sort of, you know, deity on high with magical superpowers.
And are you stoppable? Can anybody stop you, or can you stop yourself?
Probably not. Not when you get to, not when you're all the way up there at number one or at 100. I mean, by then you're so far gone that it's just,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
So apparently you have to take medication.
Which is why early intervention is really important. But the bipolar 2 will stop around 80. So the person with bipolar 2 just doesn't get quite as manic. It stops at hypomania versus mania.
Right.
And that's really the big difference. And there's other little differences, you know, here and there, of course, that, you know, doctors quibble about and are important to get good care for individuals. But that's the big difference. But to your point of whether or not it's, you know, days or weeks or hours or minutes, it can be, depending on who you are and how bipolar disorder reacts to the individual, the answer to that question is yes. For me, it always seemed to move back and forth every couple of days. You know, I'd have my moods would last a couple of days before they'd whiplash. But the depression would hang on for longer, and the worst mania that I ever had held on for almost a year. And you can do a lot of damage when you think you're invincible. And when you don't care about consequences,
is medication helpful? Is medication helpful? Could it curb it?
Yes, medication is. It's really hard to say medication is the single best treatment, because if you only have one treatment for bipolar disorder, you're probably not going to live a good life. But medication is it really, you almost need it.
Yes.
I feel very uncomfortable saying that every single person must do X, because I don't like to speak in absolutes, because I really do believe in you know, self-defined recovery and being able to make your own decisions. But I got to tell you, as somebody with bipolar 1, there is no way on earth that I could control my emotions with coping skills or therapy or management. I need that medication to get me to a point where I can notice symptoms and where I can manage symptoms and where I can make better choices. And then I need that therapy to learn what those choices are. So it's not, medication is important, therapy is important, experience is important, coping skills are important. You kind of need all of it to live well. And that's really the message that I get out there. But yeah, I mean, medication is really the single best way to control those symptoms so that you have the best chance of shining through.
Well, you're not alone. I mean, I need medication too. And the thing is about, you know, bipolar is that people, when they hear bipolar because of the limited information that they have, whatever television exposes us to, for example, and it doesn't matter whether it's bipolar 1 or bipolar 2, people tend to be scared of people who have these conditions. And there's a certain stigma that comes with it, as considering people like us as maybe half people or crazy people. Have you had any encounters as that?
Yeah, it's really tough what people believe. And it's even tougher when you consider, or I consider personally, that I believed all of those things too before I was diagnosed. I understand why people feel this way. I don't want somebody who is crazy or insane or can't control their brains or who makes bad decisions to be in my orbit. I don't think any of us do. I don't want somebody who is, you know, pardon the pun, I don't want somebody insane to watch my dog. And if you have this very narrow definition of insane to encompass all people living with mental illness, then you're going to knock a lot of people out who frankly don't deserve it. And that's really, really tough because that education isn't out there. So people believe that if you have X, you must be Y. So if you have bipolar disorder, you must be unreliable, dangerous, stupid, uneducated, just whatever. I mean, just fill in the blank. And then these persist because nobody's really challenging these misconceptions. Somebody wakes up and says, hey, all people with mental illness are violent. And all the people around them like, yeah, that tracks. That sounds good. And then everybody just believes it because nobody is, you know, challenging them. I got challenged hard because I was diagnosed with it. I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And the first thing that I thought is, oh, my God, thank God they caught it before I was violent. I could have hurt my family. I could have hurt my friends. I could have hurt people that I deeply, deeply care about. So even though at 25 years old, I had never had any propensity for violence, just because I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, I thought that it was aberrant, that the violence was coming. It just hadn't caught up with me yet. Again, complete hogwash. People with bipolar disorder are not, in fact, more violent than the rest of the population. They're just not. It's not to say that people with bipolar disorder can't be violent. Of course they can. But we see violence, unfortunately, everywhere. We see violence
with
in the
anyone.
Clergy. We see violence in teachers. We see violence in spouses and families. And unfortunately, violence is well represented.
I mean, I think it's important to look past people's faults because I do have a friend that's bipolar 1 that some people are, you know, they're scared to come around him and stuff like that. But I see beyond that. I see past that. I see the good heart in him. I see that he's a wonderful person. And it's important for people to realize that regardless of what conditions we have or what mental illness we could have, we're still human. We're still people. We're still good people. We still have a heart. We still hurt and we still feel. We're not an alien. We're not somebody different.
We will be right back with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz. And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
Welcome back to the show, and for those that are tuning in, this is The Cure with your host, Amy Cabo, joined by Boris Nikolov. If this is your first time, today we're talking to Gabe Howard about living with mental illness. Gabe, we were earlier we were talking about stigma associated with mental illness, and I know that it can make a person feel isolated and alone. I've been there. It can bring about depression and anxiety about performance. But, I mean, you would know a little bit more about this since you wrote a book called Mental Illness is an A-hole and Other Observations. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
You know, mental illness is an a-hole. I guess we're not allowed to swear on the show. But people are afraid of what they don't understand. And that's really where we get into trouble as a species in general. You know, humans are, we're afraid of noises that we hear in the dark that we don't know what they are. And if you think about that for a moment, why have we assumed that because we don't understand what the noise is, it must be a bad noise? When realistically, the majority of noises are innocuous. They're not positive, they're not negative, they're pointless. But when we hear that noise and we can't immediately identify it, we immediately get scared. What's that noise? Things that go bump in the night. And it, again, the reality is it's nothing. But this is how we're programmed. So people hear about, you know, bipolar disorder and, you know, that Gabe has been in the hospital. He was in a psychiatric ward. He was really sick. He wasn't in control. And, doctors took him and put him in a ward. I mean, wards sound so scary, and psychiatric ward and insane asylum. And I was in the hospital. I was in the hospital being treated by doctors because I was sick. I got treatment, I got well, and I was released. That's all that happened. But psychiatric ward and mental hospital and insane asylum, that sounds much, much scarier rather than when, got sick, went to doctor, got better.
Yes, when people get hurt or they have a physical illness, they go to the hospital and people visit them and give them flowers and they're so happy they got better. But if you go to mental hospital, and I know I did when I was a kid, then you're weird. We don't understand you. We're afraid of you. And I think it's important to just be accepting and forgiving and loving and non-judgmental, because, I mean, nobody's perfect. We all have our things, but we're all children of God and we're all equally loved by Him. I wanted to know, Gabe, if you have some helpful tips for anyone that is living with these conditions, whether it's bipolar, depression, anxiety, any practical advice for them of how to deal with it, the stigma, and living with it, as you have.
So first and foremost, don't ignore it. I know that we love to pretend that we're not sick. And listen, this isn't even a mental health thing. I think that we all have that person in our life that just refuses to go to the doctor, no matter what happens to them. In my life, it's my grandfather. He doesn't want to go to the doctor ever. The man's 88 years old. There's nothing wrong with him. My grandmother is constantly yelling at him. Of course, he does, but he doesn't go to the doctor because he's worried that there's something wrong with him. He goes to the doctor to make my grandmother happy. And there's a lot to learn from that, because every time he goes to the doctor, my grandmother was right and there was something wrong. Don't ignore it. My grandfather believes that ignoring his physical health will keep him alive forever. The reality is he's made it to 88 because my grandmother is smarter than he is. The mental illness is going to come for you whether you believe you have it or not. But the way that you can win, the way that you can beat it, the way that you can take control is by acknowledging it, by admitting that you have depression or anxiety or, you know, whatever it may be, and then fighting it head on, learning what coping skills you need so that when it does, you know, rear its ugly head, you're ready for it. And you can sort of, for lack of a better word, counterattack. A good defense is really, you know, a really, really good offense. And going to the doctor and reporting all of your symptoms and taking your medication as prescribed and being honest about what is happening to you are all the things that are going to get you as close to wellness as humanly possible. And then finally, the last thing, and believe me, you know, I could talk about this for hours and hours and hours and not cover everything, but I think that sometimes people need to realize that living well with mental illness doesn't mean symptom-free. Mm-hmm. So many people tell me, you know, Gabe, I want to do as well as you. Why am I not doing as well as you? And I'm like, well, why do you think you're not doing as well as me? And they're like, well, because you don't have any symptoms. That's not true. I have all kinds of symptoms, and I manage those symptoms, and I get treatment for those symptoms. You cannot define wellness as symptom-free.
Right.
You have to define wellness in some other way. For me, Gabe Howard, I believe that recovery with bipolar disorder means I spend more of my life living my life than I do managing bipolar disorder. So as long as the majority of my time, I'm just doing all kinds of boring stuff, you know, hanging out with my wife, going out with the grandkid, just whatever. As long as I'm doing those things more often than I'm managing bipolar disorder, I consider myself beating and living recovery with mental illness. And I think that that's a powerful way to think, because if you're waiting to be symptom free, it's never going to happen.
So you keep yourself busy and you know what to do. And you mentioned your wife. How is it for your wife, the support system, the people that love you? And how could those that are family members of people dealing with bipolar, depression, anxiety, how can they be supportive to those people, to us, basically? What's helpful for you?
I think that is a great question. And again, I could probably speak for hours on it, but There's a couple of things that I think that we need to think about. And when we talk about our family and friends helping us through mental illness. And the first one is all you ever talk about with your family member or friend with mental illness, that mental illness? Because if it is, yeah, that's a problem. I wouldn't want to talk to somebody that if every time I walked in the door, they immediately wanted to discuss my illness. Because that's awful. That's just so sad. I want to talk about sports or movies or TV shows or, I think I'd rather talk about politics than
even
that. Discussing all the time how sick I am. And I mean that. And, you know, so often they're like, well, every time I see my loved one, I tell him, tell me about your bipolar. I'm concerned. Well, yeah, there's the problem. Do you ask him any other question? So please be aware of that. That's the first piece of advice that I have right out of the gate. If all you're trying to do is be their caregiver, then yeah, that's not much of a relationship, is it? Let's do better.
I know for me, I don't like anybody feeling sorry for me. I want to be just a regular person, you know, one of you, one of everybody. And for that reason, a lot of people had no idea what I went through in my past or anything until I wrote my autobiography. And that's the killer of it all. They had no clue. They're like, what? You ever went through anything? And because I just take great pride in being strong. And I think that's a main character of most survivors. But we're coming up in a break. So for those that are tuning in, I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. You can listen to us every Friday at 2 p.m. or on your radio or amycabo.com, amycabo.com, or later in a podcast.
Love is the answer. God is the cure. Reveals from a very sincere and honest position, Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com. And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
We're back. Thanks for joining us and tuning in. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and this is The Cure. Remember, you can listen every Friday at 2 p.m. on amycabo.com. And remember to call in if you want to share, if you have managed to stay positive despite living with a mental illness. The number is 305-541-2350. Gabe, thank you for staying with us. You also had another idea to be able to live with what you're living with, your bipolar and your anxiety and your depression. You talk about playing games, and you say that playing games have a very positive effect. Would you like to expand on this?
I think that anything that you can do to lead as normal of a life as possible just has a tremendous amount of value. I think that we can get ultra focused on surviving. And I know that sounds funny. They're like, wait, you're saying that we shouldn't be ultra focused on surviving? And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that there's more than one way to set a table, for lack of a better analogy. If all you do is get up and think, how am I going to survive today? Then after a while, you start to wonder, do I want to survive? Because my whole life is just made up of trying to live, but you don't have anything to live for. And that's just so sad. I'm really a strong proponent of finding things that bring joy, you know, playing games, watching sports, going to concerts, taking a walk, watching television even. I mean, just whatever it is for you, do these things because they're powerful and because they're meaningful and because they provide quality of life. And a lot of times these things are social in nature, which is, you know, sort of why I kind of zero in on games a little bit, because I think that you can't, in general, play games alone. There's always some social component, whether it's online, whether it's a board game, whether it's whatever. You're generally doing it with somebody, and that sort of provides that human connection that I think is powerful for people as well. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a game. It can be whatever. But again, if all you're doing is figuring out how to survive, you're not answering what I think is a very important question, which is, why do you want to survive? What do you want your life and your legacy to be about?
You know, I think you hit it right on the dot. A connection with people or interaction with people. That's why therapy is so important. And I know that my main diagnosis is PTSD, but my most difficult symptom is depression, for which there doesn't need to be anything going wrong. I can just wake up feeling very bad. And I start it with a prayer that what I do, because I'm alone, people are gone to work or the kids are in school. When I'm not feeling okay, I try to keep busy. I try to do something that'll make me feel better. And it's no longer buying something or turning to alcohol or drugs, because I've learned it's not about me. It's about God and what is pleasing to God. So I believe if I clean the house, God will be pleased. And to my surprise, it's quite therapeutic for me, combined with music, and it's great exercise. It's not an obligation. I can ask my husband to hire a maid. But I would like to spare him the cost. Besides, a maid would be very expensive, and life is expensive as it is. I like to set myself up for things that'll make me feel good. Like, I go for a ride. I make sure that I have good company, like Bobby or a good friend or the kids. I listen to music, and, you know, And I'm listening to music and keeping my house clean so that I don't feel like I take the easy way out, or I take a shortcut, or I'm being lazy. It makes me feel good to know that I've worked out hard all day to promote a better quality of life for myself and for others. And my good deeds, I credit to God and His glory. My prayers and sacrifices are on behalf of the sinners, and all my love I give to people. Also, besides prayer, I try to do as many good things as I can. That's what helps me with feeling bad. For example, sacrifice is important, and some saints call it penance, or whatever you want to call it. Now, I'm not going to kneel on rice like my mother claims she did when she grew up in a non-convent. My sacrifice would be something more simple, like exercise. I avoid it at all cost. I guess I don't care for pain. Exercise is painful for me. Why? Because I give it my all in everything that I do. I give it my best. I believe that if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it right. And I'm going to make it count, because every day counts. And life is a blessing. it really is a blessing. So basically, I try to do all that I can to keep going and make things right, because that's how life goes.
Hi, Gabe. This is Boris. We got a question online from Facebook. Lady Lisandra is asking, can I live with depression without medication? What do you think?
I think that it's tough. I am not a doctor, and obviously I don't know your situation specifically. But I will say that the question becomes to me isn't whether or not you can or cannot live with depression without medication. It's what's the concern? So many people come up to me and they're like, well, can I live with fill in the blank without medication? And I'm like, well, you know, that's a conversation between you and your doctor. And the fact that you're looking outside of the medical establishment, it seems like maybe you already have an answer. Maybe you want the answer to be no. You don't want to have medication. And I understand that. I don't want to have any weaknesses. I want my body to be perfect 100% of the time. I don't want to have to eat right. I don't want to have to exercise. I don't want to have to drink water. I don't want to have to shower or get a haircut or trim my nail. Like, I want my body to be completely perfect. But that's not the reality. Sometimes we need a little help. And some help we don't stigmatize. Nobody says, oh, you're so weak, you have to get your hair cut. But for some reason, we get over to mental health treatment and, you know, people are like, well, I don't know, maybe you should be strong enough not to need it. And I reject all of that. That's all hogwash. Whatever interventions you need in your life from friends, family, support, or the medical community that gives you the best life possible, I think that's part of the plan. I think that's part of the design. And I think that you should embrace it. So I don't know whether you can or cannot, especially from a medical standpoint. But again, if the reason that you don't want to is because you're sort of buying into the stigma that is surrounding the treatment of mental illness, please don't. My life is so wonderful because I got good medical care. I'm now married. I own a house. I go on vacation. I'm present with my family and friends and my life. And I would have none of that if I was still trying to beat mental illness without medication. So again, that's just my personal journey. But sincerely, I see so many people that reject the help because they want to do it on their own. So there are just certain things in this world that we can't do on our own.
Yeah, so well said. And also, obviously, never ignore the medical, as you say, opinion. Go to a doctor. And I have another question from Anonymous. She's asking, or he, should I tell my boyfriend, I guess it's a she, sorry, that I have bipolar?
I understand why people ask, like, should I tell fill in the blank that I have mental illness? And I always point out, you know, isn't that so sad? I mean, could you imagine if somebody, you know, replace the word bipolar with, you know, cancer or diabetes?
Or pneumonia, you know, should I, right.
Yeah, you know, it, everybody would look at you, you know, like, well, why would you not tell your family? Yeah. Why would you not tell your friend? But for some reason, when you ask about mental illness, people are like, oh, I wonder what the answer is. That being said, I, Gabe Howard, I tried to hide it for a while. I tried to hide it, you know, not from like close friends and family, but from work and from acquaintances and from the world at large. And it really, really ate me up inside. I just felt like, how can I be sure that this person cares about me or loves me when they don't even know me? And how can I be certain that I care about them when I'm not willing to share certain parts of my life with them? And, you know, this is a decision that is very, very individual. You know, some people are oversharers on all kinds of things. And you know, some people are more private. And again, it's a very personal decision. But I got to tell you, living with bipolar disorder is difficult. And the more people in your corner, the more people who can connect with you and help you and understand you, that has enriched and helped my recovery 20-fold. It's been so, so valuable than if I tried to do it all by myself. So I say yes, but I do acknowledge that there could be concerns where people may need not to, especially in the cases of, like, you know, workplace. or smaller communities or things like that. But it's sad that we have to have the discussion.
Gabe, trust me, Boris knows difficult. But I tell him, the more difficult, the more worth it. There's more credit. You feel more proud of yourself. I always try to look for the bright side of everything. That helps me because it helps to be grateful. It helps to look at the bright side of things. It helps to be grateful for who you are, where you are, what you have. I think if you got those three things, you can live a happier life and just to be accepting of things. And, life isn't always roses. You're going to have hard times. You're going to be upset. You're going to be depressed. You're not going to be perfect. You're going to make mistakes and you're going to have faults. It's all a learning lesson. And that's the experiences that we go through in life. And it doesn't make us bad. And it doesn't make us a bad person or anything like that. We just have to realize that we have to be forgiving of ourselves and others and be very understanding, as understanding as possible.
And isn't perfect one of those, it's one of those difficult words, isn't it? Because for me, the perfect weather is 70 degrees, overcast, and no rain with a light breeze in the fall. I love the fall. But for the majority of my family, they love summer. They love to be on the beach. They love to go swimming. I would never get in a pool. So they want it to be 90 degrees. Who wants it to be 90 degrees? And yet other people, they're like, no, I love the winter. You know, cozied up next to a fire with hot cocoa, going skiing in the morning. And each one of us is describing perfect weather, even though we're in completely different seasons.
Right.
Perfect is a lie. It's an illusion.
Yes,
we get to decide what's perfect. Choose wisely.
I think perfect is trying. I think that's all that's required of us, is try and try again. And if you fail, try and try again. Persistence pays. And if you carry
it really does. We learn a lot by failing.
Sure.
I sincerely believe that. I'm not saying that I love to fail. I'm not. I'm a realist. I want to succeed at everything I do the very first time. I don't want anybody to think that I'm all zen. I'm not. I want to succeed number one with little effort. But that's not reasonable. I fail constantly. And I look at how I failed. I make adjustments and I try again. Because in my mind, and I believe this, if I eventually succeed, then I never failed. It was just part of the journey. Those were just the trial and errors to get me here. And if I quit, well, then I failed. I tried something, I failed, and I never did it again. That in my mind is kind of what failure looks like. If you try and you keep trying, like you said, eventually you succeed. And then those things weren't failures. They were just great stories as part of the journey.
And one of the things that I do that, to help myself, thanks to my guests, I've learned a lot of things. I've learned to have self-compassion. I learned that exercising helps, meditating and relaxing, learning about God. I'm reading books about saints that battled Satan, and I'm learning a lot of things like you should be grateful for the good times and the bad times. They both have good things in it. Why? Because there's God. And I like to read inspirational articles and, listening to good advice, writing down your thoughts and desires, listening to comforting music, petting your furry babies and grooming them. The love that you get in return is very much worth it. I try all kinds of things. And that's what you have to do. You just have to keep trying. Never give up. Life is worth it. You were here for a purpose. You're here for a reason. It's worth fighting for. Thank you so much, Gabe. It's hard to believe, guys, we've come to the end of the show once again. Thank you all for listening. And Gabe, thank you for being a most wonderful guest on our show. For more information,
thank you so much for having me.
For more information on Gabe, it can be found on amycabo.com under guest. This has been The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. Thanks for listening. Check my website, amycabo.com, on previous shows.
The Cure with Amy Cabo was brought to you by IMIC Research, 786-310-7477 or www.godisthecure.com. Tune in every Friday at 2 p.m. for The Cure with Amy Cabo right here on 880 The Biz.